Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn. I'm Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. With me today, the man, the myth, the legend, Charlie Kovarik. He's back. He handles credit for us. He's working out of his parents' basement up in Chicago. And Freddie Laverick is also joining us. Freddie handles all equity trading portfolio management with me and also our portfolio models. So we wanted to bring both these guys back. Adam is hosting a golf outing, which is a great day to be outside right now. So with that, Freddie and Charlie, welcome. We will dig in. We're going to cover just a little bit on the economy and where we are at right now, and then work our way into the equity markets, credit markets, and portfolio models. So right now, just kind of set the backdrop, and I apologize if this sounds like a broken record, but it provides a context for where we are as investors. And it's important, especially heading into an election, given the uncertainty, not only that the election brings, but this whole journey through the pandemic. And heading into the pandemic was a weakening economy in and of itself, not only domestically, but globally. And so we're at a critical point of inflection in the economy right now, we think. Government support for the unemployed worker ran out at the end of July. And the question now is, can the consumer sector hold up in August in the absence of timely assistance? Now, when we had over 15 million people unemployed, we have 15 million people unemployed right now, but the $600 per week benefit that was provided through Congress through the CARES Act, that expired July 25th. Now, President Trump has signed an executive order that provides $300 and in some cases potentially up to $400 of weekly unemployment benefits to qualified workers. That'll be retroactive to August 1st. The problem is that it's a cumbersome to implement that. So it's not really putting money in people's hands right now. So the August numbers are at risk of showing a steep decline in consumption, given that we don't have that support in place. At the same time, the transition for students back to school has been bumpy. So some schools are participating in class, others are remote. College football is a fraction of its potential. We're still prohibited from gathering in restaurants, sporting events, and concerts without social distancing. So we estimate that $2 trillion of economic activity is currently shut down. So this is where we're at right now, is this inflection point. It has to do with getting stimulus in the hands of consumers to help sustain the economy and the consumption part of the economy. So we expect the back-to-school season for retailers is going to be a huge bust this year. Now, in many cases, our view is that the coronavirus has really accelerated the demise of companies and industries that have been operating outdated or inefficient business models. So brick and mortar retail has been struggling for years leading up to the pandemic. And now the companies that have web-based strategies like Walmart and Target are thriving. And Freddie's going to hit on Target's earnings last week. But it's a real inflection point for our economy right now. And it's literally the haves and the have-nots. So we've maintained that the labor market is one of the key factors in building sustained economic recovery. So that's one of the critical issues is the second half of the year that we are in right now is the ability for the economy to produce jobs. The answer to all of this has been to add to our budget deficit and our debt burden, to spend aggressively, to provide government assistance, and we're still limping along. So it's been an expensive recovery and level of support. And there are seeds that are being planted. We're going to talk about this in a bit here, but the seeds that are being planted now for the next financial crisis, it's going to be a challenge. So with that, Freddie, I'm going to turn it over to you if you can give us some highlights from last week and where we are in the equity market.
Yep. Thanks, Greg. So last week, the S&P was up almost 1%. So that brings it to all-time highs of 3397. So that marks the end of the shortest bear market in history, and by far the quickest recovery. So year to date, the S&P is now up 5%. In earnings season, beat rates have continued. 82% of companies have beaten expectations. Looking at sector by sector, tech has the highest beat rate at 87%. Most sectors fall within a 70 to 80% beat range. Real estate and energy were the weakest, both near 50%. As you mentioned last week, we saw a strong quarter out of Target. Target reported earnings of 338 versus 162 expected. Revenue beat by $3 billion, and same-store sales tripled estimates at up 24%, which was an all-time high. E-commerce was the big driver, 700% growth for their curbside pickup, 10 million new digital customers. Looking at their merchandise categories, all five of them had strong sales. Strongest sales were in electronics, up 70%, with home office and video games picking up. Beauty was up 20%, and its online delivery service Shipt grew 350% year over year. So solid earnings out of Target. Stock rose over 10% on the release, and year to date, that brings its number up to 20%.
So Freddie, the way the S&P 500 is shaped right now, we've got five stocks that are just dominating the market cap of the index, right? So we got Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Apple, and Facebook. They represent 20% of the market cap of the index. What risks do you see right now, given that concentration?
Yeah, not just that. Most of it, all of it comes from tech. And even when you add back Amazon, Google, Netflix, if you add that back to the tech sector, it makes up 40% of the total index. Wow. So the risks are in when you're in rally mode, like we are, that's good news. But when there is a sector rotation, that also, it means the same thing for the downside case as well.
Yeah. So one thing we know is markets don't move in straight lines. So at some point we are going to see a rotation into the COVID affected industries. And the work, preliminary work we did was that, the concentrated positions contributed 37% year to date in total return for the S&P, which means the remaining largest part of the index, the S&P 500, declined by 6%. So fewer and fewer number of companies are hitting 52-week highs in the face of this rally. That's a concern. But at some point, I don't know if it's we get a vaccine, the cases, we finally get control of the spread of the virus, but at some point, the economy will start to normalize, and we would expect these businesses, eventually these stocks to do better in a recovery. But we're still, I don't know if we're in the third inning or the fifth inning of this baseball game. Do you have an opinion on that? It's hard to tell.
It really is. And predicting is hard to tell, but you don't want to use your shift too late, which takes us to our models. When those COVID industries do recover, it'll be fairly quick. So we have started adding a sleeve of the equal weighted S&P index, ticker RSP. As we talked about, it's very concentrated at the top. So this ETF provides equal weights for every company that make up the S&P and allows us to have a larger exposure to those COVID industries. So it's down 6% year to date because of those industries. And this is a play on that recovery.
Yeah. So this, if investors look this up in Morningstar or some database, the performance is going to show pretty mediocre. Just because of the strength of these large cap stocks, right? So the COVID affected industries, which are restaurants, hotels, gaming, cruise lines, airlines, I mean, they have not performed at all, and have drug this equally weighted index down. Freddie, why this instead of a value stock fund or ETF?
Most of the value ETFs out there, are really, when you look at the, what it's made up of in the top 10 holdings, these are large cap companies that have actually performed fairly well, and I wouldn't exactly classify it as value. As they're really more quality and growth based ETFs. So they don't give you that exposure that you'd want into the industries that have been affected with lower performance.
Interesting. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for that great introduction. Coming to you live from my parents' basement.
So credit markets, what are you seeing in the credit markets right now?
So I can liken it somewhat similar to this sector rotation that you and Spready were speaking about. And I think because the bond market tends to run a little bit before the stock market, I think this is fairly applicable. You've seen a ton of outperformance in the high quality tranches of both the IG and the high rate or high yield corporate indices. So AAAs and AAs have vastly outperformed BBBs, and BBBs have vastly outperformed CCCs. But what we've seen this month is we're seeing a pullback where the low quality ratings have actually outperformed. So month to date, the BBBs have tightened in 4 basis points, whereas AAAs and AAs have widened out 2. And in high yield, BBs have widened out 20 basis points, whereas CCCs have only widened out 3. And especially in high yield, that's a weird number to look at because CCCs tend to outperform when the index is tightening and underperform when the index is widening. But we're seeing them outperform while the index is widening this month. So that is, I think, the interesting thing to look at here. Another thing to consider is that investors still are allocating to high yield. The yield on the index is worth it over investment grade. They have over 5.5% yield, whereas IG is under 2% nowadays. The primary market has been, sorry, continue.
Charlie, let me just interject here. In the credit market, there's just been just huge issuance by a lot of companies. Are you concerned about the increasing debt burden that these companies are starting to carry?
So that's definitely a concern. What I would say is that many of these, the primary new issuance here is tender driven. So they're taking they're taking advantage of historically low interest rates right now to term out their 2021 and 2022 debt. So in a lot of these cases, the companies do take on more of they pay more interest because they're moving out from 2021 to 10-year plus debt. But the actual net levels of debt is not increasing as much as would be expected with the level of primary issuance that we've realized so far this year.
Yeah. One of the benefits the Federal Reserve has provided companies with low interest rates is the liquidity is the ability to access the public markets to restructure their debt burden.
And you've seen that in a lot of companies that really shouldn't have such ease of access into the capital markets, which have come now 2 or 3 times since the beginning of the year.
So when this, again, we have to look past this, when things start to normalize and we look at companies that have come to market like McDonald's that had big issuance, just really to try to build a war chest to weather the pandemic. When all is said and done, and next year we look at the debt load of these companies, is there concern? Or do they have a way to put it down?
A lot of these companies are ramping back up their cash flow in the COVID-related sectors. That is really the story here. We've seen companies like airlines are 25% of what their usual EBITDA would be. But we have seen a lot of companies like Darden restaurants, which would be in that COVID sector, being able to replicate their previous year's cash flow by the increased build-out of alternative methods like curbside delivery and in-house delivery. Yeah. So it is a concern, although we are seeing added discussion in management earnings calls, how they're mitigating that risk.
Yeah. Hey, before we end this, I wanted to talk about Apple with both of you guys. So Apple hit a milestone last week. Freddie, can you unpack that for us?
Yeah. So Apple became the first company to hit a market cap of over $2 trillion. Right now, it's actually at $2.1 trillion already because it keeps going up. But year to date, it's up 70%.
Another $100 billion.
Yeah, it's trading close to $500 right now, and yeah, up 70% year to date.
So it took 42 years to hit the $1 trillion mark, and just another 2 years to double it to $2 trillion.
Yep.
All right. So Charlie, Apple was one of those companies that's been a repeat issuer in the bond market, and they've come with some sizable debt offerings, right?
Correct. They have a negative debt load. So if you take their cash on hand, buy their debt, they just have this huge buildup of actual cash and cash equivalents on their books.
Right. So that's where I was going, is that they issued $10 billion worth of debt, but they go up to $2 trillion. Their debt to equity is still extremely small, given the debt issuance. So this is the rare exception to what we're seeing in the COVID affected industries, where the cap on these, and this also applies to Amazon and Microsoft, and Google actually came a couple of weeks ago with a large issuance, but as their market cap grows, the market cap of their debt or their equity, the debt to equity, when they release these, it's still very, very small.
I saw an interesting article the other day where companies like Apple that have these huge cash line items, they actually had their own somewhat robust bond portfolios.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that article. I think it was on CNBC.
I did not. Hey, before we end, tell me what you guys think of the playoffs down in Orlando. You watching it?
I'll defer to Freddie on this one. I'm not much of an NBA guy.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing. Luka Doncic just had a game winner yesterday. And Donovan Mitchell, another 20-year-old, just had two straight 50-point games. So these games are unbelievable, really.
So you think this is a good format for the NBA?
I mean, we get basketball, so
yeah,
I'm okay with it.
Exactly. I know. All right. Well, on that note, you guys, let's end this for the week. You guys have a great week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you during the week. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.